Good morning. If I haven't met you, my name's Steve. I'm one of the four guys on the summer preaching team, and I get to kick off our summer series on wisdom for living. Children are determined to have fun no matter what the circumstances. That enthusiasm for playing and having a good time overrules obstacles right in front of their faces. Our pool is very cold right now. It's in the shade, it's early in the season, but our grandkids won't let that stop them. They will get in that thing and swim till they're blue and have ice around their lips. I saw this phenomenon at the church picnic. We're having an egg toss. It starts to rain. The adults run for cover. The kids stay out there and throw eggs. As a rule of thumb, kids will find a way to laugh and play, even if the circumstances are less than ideal. And that's a beautiful trait. Absolutely beautiful. Kids refuse to let uncomfortable facts steal their happiness. That is commendable. Last summer, Les and I took Timothy and Charlie, two of our grandsons, to Maine to visit her mom and dad. On one of those days, we took a day trip to a beautiful beach called Pine Point. Armed with shovels and pails, the boys got right to work building a sandcastle. They started digging it right at the edge of the wet sand. I said, "Fellas, we need to move this thing back because when the tide rises, the waves will get it." Of course, that meant nothing to them, and we built the thing right there. Well, as expected, the waves assaulted the walls. It filled the moat. But that didn't deter them either. For about an hour, we frantically patched walls and rebuilt the thing and stayed at it. And over, the waves came and washed it down and down and down. Now, those boys had the time of their lives building a sandcastle, knowing full well what those waves would do to it. What a beautiful way to spend a summer afternoon. But I suggest to you that that scene at the beach illustrates a beautiful way for all of us to spend our whole lives. Here's what I mean. Just as those boys had a blast building a sandcastle, knowing full well the reality of the waves, you and I are to enjoy our years knowing full well the sobering realities of our lives. Like them, we must not allow uncomfortable facts to rob our joy. Like children, we should enjoy the pool instead of the cold. We should enjoy an egg toss in the rain. We should enjoy the sand in spite of the surf. By and large, we're terrible at this. As we age and become more familiar with the limitations of life, our capacity for joy and happiness shrinks. As our optimism gives way to reality, we can become serious. We can even become gloomy. Now, don't get me wrong. Tears are to be part of a godly life. There are times to grieve deeply. Solomon says there's a time for everything, a time to mourn, a time to cry. But he also says there's a time to laugh and a time to dance. I think it's safe to say we're way better being gloomy than we are being joyful. We're better at focusing on what's wrong than on what's right. We're better at focusing on the rising tide rather than the pleasures of the sand. I have, for the most part, been a very happy guy my whole life. I have routinely enjoyed eating. I love doing that. I have always enjoyed building things. It's just a hobby that gives me pleasure. I have always gotten a kick out of good conversation, and I want this to continue. But honestly, I've been struggling as of late. Les and I are looking at some challenges that are unique to this phase of our lives. Our parents are aging. Our health, in some measure, is deteriorating. Our dearest friends are struggling with absolutely heartbreaking issues. We're also concerned about the world that our grandchildren are growing up in. So this sermon about happiness is far from academic. It's coming from here. This is very personal. This morning, our question is this: how? How are we to remain happy in light of the sobering realities of life? How are we to stay joyful in the face of uncomfortable facts? How are we to enjoy the sand in spite of the surf. How are we to do this? That question is answered for us by Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, we're going to be looking at a whole bunch of verses in that book. So if you want to just sit and listen, that's fine. If you want to follow along and turn pages, you can do that. Chapter 7 will probably be our launching pad. How are we to remain happy in light of the realities of life? Solomon calls us to do two things. Two things. They're not easy, but they're necessary. If we want to remain joyful on our time on earth, we need to do these two things. And the first one is this. If we want to remain happy, we need to accept the profound limitations of this life. We need to face the sobering facts head on, honestly, and come to the point of acceptance. We need to accept the profound limitations of life. My son-in-law, Phil, a year or so ago, cut down two huge live oak trees in his front lawn. Now he is looking at two massive, ugly stumps. I promise you, heaven and earth will pass away, and those two stumps will remain. But like ugly stumps in a green lawn, life this side of heaven is embedded with a number of universal, immovable, unchangeable, uncomfortable facts. In this book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is brutally honest. He spells out clearly what we're up against. We don't have to like these things. We simply must accept them. I drive a very old car. It's a 1996 Ford Taurus. It has a sort of whitish, dull finish on it. I am not vain about the vehicle that I drive. I'm really not. I plan on driving it for 10 more years. But the other day, somebody backed into my car and dented the front driver's door. Okay, the insurance company's not going to pay when all down that. It's not worth me paying to fix it. So I'm stuck with that for 10 years. The thing was already hideous, and now it's got a dent in the door. All right, here are my options. I can stay mad about it. I can think about that guy. He should have stopped. He should have owned up to it. I can deny it. I can say, it doesn't look that bad, but it does look bad. I can complain about it like I'm doing it today. Another option, I can relive it. Every time I go to the door, that door's dented. Or I can accept it. I can accept it. I say, it's happened. It's over. It stinks. I accept it. That's what we need to do with the realities of life this side of the grave. Now, I wish that what I'm about to talk about was along the lines of a dent in a car door. But that's not the case. The facts that Solomon shares are profound. May God give us all the grace to accept these facts. Solomon addresses many. I narrowed them down to just a handful. How are we to stay happy in light of the limitations, the profound limitations of life? We need to accept these facts. Here's number one. Fact number one. Not one of us will live a completely righteous life. Not one of us here will live a completely righteous life. I'm reading from chapter 7, verses 20 through 22. We read in black and white, "There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins." He goes on, "Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, for you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others." Now, I wish I could say that verse applies to us before we're saved only, but we know that's not the case. We know all too well that's not the case. Sin is like a passenger in our car for the entire journey. Sometimes it gets the steering wheel. Other times we manage to get him tied up in the trunk, but he's always there. Yes, our sin is forgiven, but it's not gone. Very practically, this grim facts mean that our relationships will suffer. We read that our servant will curse us, and we will curse others. Others will hurt us, and we will hurt them. That's the way it is. Our relationships with God's help can be good, they can be enduring, but they cannot be perfect this side of heaven. We need to come to terms with that fact, especially as it applies to our closest relationships. Our spouse will hurt us, and we will hurt him or her. Our friends will hurt us. We will hurt them. We shouldn't be surprised by that. Our siblings will hurt us. We will hurt them. Our parents will hurt us. We will hurt them. Bottom line, we need to lower our expectations of each other. Until we do that, we will be perpetually irritated, annoyed, or angry at somebody. Until we accept that fact, we will not have a shot at living a happy life. Not one of us will live a completely righteous life. That's the way it is. We need to accept that. Here's another uncomfortable fact. Another example of the limitations of this life, this side of the grave. If we want to be happy, we need to accept this fact. We cannot control the future. You and I cannot control the future. No matter how carefully we plan, no matter how wisely we live, we cannot guarantee a favorable outcome from our actions. I've got three passages where Solomon makes this clear. I'm looking at chapter 9, verse 1. Solomon says, "So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. And listen to this, but no man knows whether love or hate awaits him." I don't like that verse. Here's another one, chapter 11, verse 1 and 2. He says, "Cast your bread upon the waters, and after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes, to eight." And listen to this, "For you do not know what disaster may come upon the land." We don't know. Flip the page to verse 6 in chapter 11. He says the same thing. He says, "Sow your seed in the morning, and at evening do not let your hand be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well." And this idea is never said more clear than in chapter 7. Some of the most profound verses in the whole Bible. I'm looking at chapter 7, verse 13. I've got them underlined. I've memorized them. They've stood me in good stead. Listen, consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are happy, or when times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. Clearly, God's word says we cannot control our future. That's a sobering fact. As a boy, I used to look at life like a soda machine. If I put in my money, I pressed Dr. Pepper, I'd wait a minute and an ice cold Dr. Pepper would roll out the bottom. I felt that if I did the right things, I would get the results that I wanted. But Solomon says the opposite. We can do all the right things, but we have no guarantee of the results. We can press Dr. Pepper and we might get a diet root beer or something like that. That means we can drive carefully and get in an accident. We can invest wisely and lose our money. We can train our children in the fear of the Lord and they can stray. We can eat well, exercise, die of a heart attack. We can be a faithful spouse and be rejected. It's the way it is. We can do everything just right and not get the outcome we desire. These verses tell us that in the world as God has designed it, he can bring about the unexpected, the inconvenient, the uncomfortable as he sees fit. He can reach into our straight times and bend them. He can change prosperity into adversity. He can interrupt blessing with heartache. We do not control the future. God does. I know for certain that this fact is very difficult for God's people to accept. Many, many believers live angry at God, or at best, very disappointed with them. They feel, God, you have no right to do this. I don't deserve this. This is not fair. And feelings like that squeeze out the joy. If we want to have a shot at a happy life, we need to come to terms with that fact. We need to accept it. Are you depressed yet? All right, there's more. All right, here's another grim reality. Not only can we not control the future, as we've just seen, the Bible tells us that we cannot undo the past. From our perspective, the future is written in pencil, but our past is written in ink. Turn over to chapter 11, verse 3. Solomon says, if clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. And here's where I'm focusing. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. I have sawed down quite a few trees in my day, and every one of them has fallen exactly where I did not want it to. On the gutter, on the roof, in the power lines. This is the way it goes. But no matter where it fell, there it lied. That's a fact. There is a sobering finality in the events of this life. There is no replay button. There's probably not a person in this room that wouldn't like to go back and change something. We say, if only I had gone to the doctor sooner. Or if only I had chosen a different career. If only I had shut my mouth and I didn't ruin that relationship. We all have regrets. And as much as we like to, we can't go back. We can only go forward. Until we accept that fact, we're going to struggle with joy. All right, so how can we remain happy? We need to accept that not one of us will live a completely righteous life. We need to accept that we don't have control over our future, and we need to accept that we cannot undo the past. We need to come to a settled acceptance of these profound limitations. But there's one more I'd like to share with you, and this is the one that bothers me the most. I'd rather skip over this one. I'd rather ignore this, but Solomon says we need to take these things to heart. We need to take these things to heart. If we want to remain joyful, we need to come to terms with this fact. Every one of us will grow old, will die, and be forgotten. Every single one of us in this room will grow old, die, and be forgotten. Chapter 7, again, verse 2. Solomon says it's better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting. And here it is. For death is the destiny of every man. He says the living should take this to heart. That's what we're doing. We're taking this to heart. Flip over to chapter 2, verse 16. This is even more grim. Chapter 2, verse 16. Solomon says, for the wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. If Jesus doesn't return, this is the best case scenario for everyone in this room. Like a sand castle on the beach, we will all be washed away. When I was in high school in Pennsylvania, our youth group used to go to a publicly funded care center for the elderly. We would go there on Sunday afternoons to do a little church service for the residents. It was heartbreaking for me to see up close the effects that time has on the human body. Time is a thief, a very clever thief. It comes along and robs our eyesight. It comes along and steals our hearing. It robs us of our vitality and our beauty, incrementally, always sneaking up successfully. These people that we spent those afternoons with used to be children climbing on monkey bars, used to be boys riding their bicycles. They were young brides. They were soldiers. They were athletes. And now they're in wheelchairs, barely able to lift their heads. Now, honestly, at this point in my life, thinking of my own future, I'm okay with that. I really am. If I end up in an old folks' home, I plan on being the life of the party. I'm even okay thinking about my own funeral. I really am. Everybody standing around talking about what a great guy I was. I've made arrangements in my will to have the food catered. It's mesquite barbecue. I want you all to have a good time at my funeral. What bothers me most is not my own demise. What bothers me most is seeing the impact of all this on people that I love. Now, many of you kids say, oh, I don't even understand what you're talking about. But I think you do. Some of you children have lost a grandparent. That's a heartbreak. The process is beginning. You kids can understand that. I lost my pop-pop when I was in second grade. At home, I have a hairbrush with his initials on it. I have a little toy train, and I have a tool. That's all I have left of him. My memories are very few. Most of you here that are my age have already buried your parents, your mom and your dad. Some of you are presently giving all you've got and more, caring for your aging parents, anticipating their death. This is all heartbreaking. I'm sorry. Both Leslie's parents and my parents are all alive. They're doing remarkably well for their age. My dad's 91 years old and stronger than most of you. We are so thankful for that. Just the other day, I was having a catch with Timothy, my 8-year-old grandson. We were out in the park and we're throwing a hardball around. We each had our gloves on, and I would throw grounders and pop-ups and count out loud. And he had to field them and get them back to me before I got to 5 to get an out. As we were doing that, something dawned on me. That was exactly what my dad did with me when I was a little boy. Exactly. He would throw grounders and pop-ups and count out loud. At that poignant moment, I said, where have the years gone? Where have the years gone? I am not happy about this. My dad is the kindest man that has ever walked the earth. And I don't want to say goodbye to him. And I sure don't want him to be forgotten. Clearly, I have yet to come to terms with that fact. But I need to, and we all need to. If we want to remain happy, we need to accept that sad fact that we will all grow old, die, and be forgotten. Those, my friends, are just four of the inevitable, unchangeable facts of life. It's the way it is. Not the way it was in the garden. Not the way it will be in heaven. It's the way it is now. And Solomon wants us to lower our expectations of this life, this side of glory. He wants us all to admit that life is tough. Somehow, when we accept that life is difficult, it becomes a little less difficult. If we all, by the grace of God, learn to face and accept these facts, we'll have laid the foundation for a happy life. All right, that's the first thing we need to do if we want to remain happy through our years on earth. Here's the second thing. Okay, this one's more cheerful. Not only do we need to accept the profound limitations of life, we need to also fully enjoy the gifts of God. We need to fully enjoy the gifts of God from the mundane to the majestic. We need to celebrate God's blessings in our lives. True, life has uncomfortable aspects, to put it mildly. But life also has staggering blessings as well. Here's the point. A wise person embraces both. On just Monday night, Memorial Day, it was dark. We were in the driveway and Eli was chasing lightning bugs. All right, you would have thought those bugs were $100 bills. Like little boys chasing lightning bugs, you and I should pursue and grab hold of and enjoy the pleasant things God sends our way. Let me read to you some of the most beautiful verses in this book. Listen to Solomon call us to joy. I'm looking at chapter 5, verses 18 and 19. Solomon says, "Then I realized that it is good. It is proper for a man to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him, for this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift from God." Chapter 11. Verse 8, Solomon says the same thing again. It's pretty clear. Verse 8, chapter 11, he says, "However many years a man may live," here it is, "let him enjoy them all." How about chapter 9, verse 7 and 8? Verse 7 says, "Go eat your food with gladness. Drink your wine with a joyful heart. For it is now that God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white. Always anoint your head with oil." He could not be more clear. You and I have a moral obligation to find satisfaction and happiness in the good gifts from God. These gifts include, he mentions, things like health and relationships and possessions and even things as mundane as food and drink. If it's good, it's from God and it's to be fully enjoyed. In this world that God created, we find infinite numbers of colors. We find countless varieties of plants and animals, all sorts of sounds and smells, virtually unlimited varieties of food. There's oceans, rivers, mountains, stars, flowers, gemstones, and on it goes. God didn't just create a utilitarian world like the motor vehicle office or something like that, where everything's merely functional and practical with no frills, where everybody just eats oatmeal all the time and everything's flat and black and white. And birds just sit there and don't sing. No, God went nuts. God went nuts. He went over the top. In Genesis, he said, God looked at all that he made. He said, "It is very good, very good." And then he created you and me with an amazing capacity to take in those beautiful things in his wonderful world. We have eyes that can see infinite colors. We have ears that can hear all kinds of music and things. We have tongues that can enjoy all the variety of tastes and textures. We have minds to create, explore, to speak, to sing, to love each other. These are from God. We are perfectly designed to enjoy God's wonderful world. We are like toast in a toaster. We're like a rider on a horse, poised to enjoy God's gifts. God's creation is an expression of who he is, of his character. A blazing sunset screams majesty. A thunderstorm like we had just the other day just shouts of the power and the might of God. A flower, his beauty. Maybe an anteater, his sense of humor. I don't know. as we enjoy God's gifts, recognizing Him as the source, we are in essence enjoying Him. All His good gifts are like rungs on a ladder, just taking us closer to Him. A hot shower, a grapefruit, the sound of the rain, a game of basketball, a golden retriever, chocolate. Last night I was struggling on this sermon, so I had some chocolate. I enjoyed that to the glory of God. Then I had another one, then I had another. Leslie was in bed and she didn't keep an eye on me. So that's how it goes. As we enjoy these things with gratitude from God who gave them, we bring Him glory. Solomon says, it is good, it is proper to enjoy God's gifts. Our three grandsons, Eli, Timothy, and Charlie, collect sports cards, baseball and football and basketball cards. Okay, there's a store up the road. The owner's name is Jim, and Jim has gotten to know our grandsons quite well. John, the owner. The other day, John told Eli that he had something special for him for his birthday. And John quietly slid across the counter one single sports card. Now, you can't see this, but this is Jackie Robinson. This is a Jackie Robinson card. It's the first African-American to ever play in Major League Baseball. Eli has practically worshipped the guy, and John knew that. Eli was ecstatic. Now, why did John give Eli this card? Simply because he wanted to make a little boy very happy. And that's why God gives us all these pleasant gifts, to bring us joy in the midst of this difficult world. All right, here's my concern. I'm afraid that God gives you and me 50 of these cards every day, and we hardly notice. All right, shame on us. Shame on us. We say when God gives us a gift, oh, I'll enjoy that when I get out of debt. Or I'm busy this semester. You know, when I get out of this semester, then I'll enjoy life. When my health is better, I'll enjoy God's gifts later, but not today. And that is so foolish. Tomorrow's too late to enjoy today's blessings. Solomon says in our verse that we just read, our memory verse for the week, he says to you and me today, go eat your food with gladness. Drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. How can you and I remain happy in light of the realities of life? Here it is. By accepting the profound limitations on one hand and by fully enjoying God's gifts with the other. Summer is here, and I suspect a number of you are going to take a trip with your family or your spouse. Perhaps some of you will even get to the beach. All right, if you do, and somebody happens to ask you to build a sandcastle in the wet sand, 3 feet from the surf, your answer is yes. Yes, you will do it knowing full well what will happen. You will do it and enjoy every second of that moment to the glory of God. My friends, I know life is difficult. I know life is beyond difficult for some of you in this room right now. I'm so sorry. But by the grace of God, let's not let those profound hardships squeeze out the pleasures. Let's not let the reality of the surf rob us of the joys of the sand. Lord, life is mysterious, life is rich in hardships, but life is full of joys. Help us by your grace to manage these things and live a life that brings you honor and glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.